Hey, it's Rollo McFlugel here. Before we actually get into the episode, I just have to make a little bit of a correction for myself. All through this episode, I was referring to it as episode number 63. It's actually episode 62. So episode 63 will be next week. So make sure that if you go to the show notes page and you type it in to your address bar, you do mcflugel.com/62. So remember, this is episode 62. I guess I got a little excited and ahead of myself. So with that, let's send you off to the episode. Episode, say it with me, 62. Hello and welcome to episode 63 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is October 23rd, 2017. I am Rollo McFlugel and with me is Slappy Jones 2, and we are both of McFlugel.com. The show notes page for this episode is McFlugel.com/63, where you'll find some relevant links, including some further reading on what we're talking about today. So with that, I'm going to hand it right over to Slappy, and he's going to introduce our topic for this episode.
Yeah, thank you, Rollo. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. We're drawing inspiration from Twitter yet again. I know that's been a theme lately, but there's a lot of good stuff out there and a lot of stuff that needs responses, and 140 characters doesn't always give you enough. So we're going to do a podcast episode on it, and this was a tweet. Was this yesterday, I believe? Today is the 22nd? 23rd. So there was a tweet out there that Rollo did some replying to, but it's by Human at Rubellaball, and he says, quote, "Elites want immigrants because they keep wages low. Good for the economy does not mean good for you and me." Then he attached a supply and demand curve showing the wage rates, and as the supply of labor increases, the quantity of labor hours demanded increases, but the price goes down, the wage rate decreases. And it's a simple supply and demand curve, an X with the positive slope shifting to the right, so the equilibrium point goes down. Rollo, why is he wrong?
Facts are great, and a lot of people do this, and it's really annoying. Facts are great, but when you don't know how to analyze the facts, or you misapply them or attach logical fallacies to them, then they're absolutely worthless. And this is the case of that. So I think one of his biggest mistakes is that he does not acknowledge the existence of the ceteris paribus.
Which means?
Holding all else equal.
Which, if anyone here has taken an economics class, you've heard that many, many times. It actually gets annoying when you're in an economics class, because all these shifts, they say all else equal.
Right. And I've even, you know, talking to someone before who had a degree in economics, who I was kept mentioning the ceteris paribus, and he was just like, kind of was dismissing it. He's like, well, okay, yeah, but that just means it works in theory. It doesn't mean it actually works in practice, which is extremely wrongheaded. But for talking about with this guy on Twitter, okay. I mean, I'm not gonna deny what the chart says. The chart is basic supply and demand, but that's not there's so much else going on in an economy that yeah, you might have the effect of a wage rate going down, but with the increase of immigrants, but okay, so he says it's good for the economy doesn't mean good for you and me. Well, I don't know. I don't think there's too many like immigrants coming over that are going to take my job. So not that it can't happen, but I mean, if we think about if we open the border with Mexico and we had a lot of Mexicans and other people from Latin America come in and flood the country, say, they're mostly taking a certain kind of job, and it's mostly, you know, fairly unskilled labor. Jobs that there's obviously a pull for them to come do if they're willing to cross the border and take all that risk and everything. So I don't understand how I should feel threatened by them.
Well, that's nice for you to say because you are college educated and you have white privilege.
Right.
But what about the Americans who work in these, you know, blue collar labor intensive jobs, unskilled labor?
Who?
Oh, the guy, Hugh Mann.
Right. I mean, is he out picking the mushrooms?
I have no idea. I have no clue.
I know what you're getting at, but
yeah,
I mean, okay. So let's take that. Let's say that, it is a field where you or I would be threatened. Our jobs would be threatened by a wave of immigrants coming in. Well, there's a few things that you could say about that. One is if someone's coming in and offer, I mean, you don't have a right to your job and you don't have the right to a wage rate.
I'd actually argue it's not your job.
Right. It's not.
No, your employer has the job and you're trading your labor for his right. money.
So as soon as someone else comes in and offers less, it doesn't matter if they're an immigrant or not. They're well within their rights to do that. And, you know, and let's take into some other things into account. Let's assume, I don't know, does the immigrant even speak the language that's required? Do they have, I mean, there's a million things that go into it, but let's just say that's everything's equal. They can, there's no problem with the language barrier. They could just come in and demand a lower wage. Like why shouldn't your employee or your employer get to decide to hire the other person over you? And why can't you lower your wage, what you demand? Maybe that's a signal that the wages are a little bit too high in that sector, that there's other people coming in willing to undercut a little bit. Because you're making a lot of money. And so they're like, hey, I can get in on that. It's just like any other price.
Well, right, exactly. So prices send signals to the market. And let's just say that immigrants flood the border in Texas. And now we have a ton of labor down there. And so it's really cheap. What signal does that send to the market? Like, wouldn't companies move down there to get the cheap labor, which would also then increase wages?
Maybe. It depends on...
Ceteris paribus, but, you know, as long right. as they can freely do that and the costs of moving aren't so great.
Right.
But we see that all the time in the insurance industry.
You can even apply that to... and I don't mean to cut you off, but you can even apply that to my line of work. So I'm an engineer that works in an oil refinery. I could make a lot more money if I packed up and moved to Saudi Arabia. But I don't want to move to Saudi Arabia.
Right.
I like where I live here. Even I can make more money if I moved to Texas and work down there. But there's other things involved.
Right. Well, I bring that up because in my industry, in the insurance industry, there's been a couple companies that have moved from the northeast of the United States to North Carolina because of different laws and cheaper labor and cheaper cost of living.
Right. I think Boeing was trying to do that, but a couple of years ago, the federal government blocked them because it was they weren't legally bound by law to hire a union labor force.
Right. I know MetLife did that and AXA, and there's probably a few others. But that's very expensive for a company to do that. But they found that, you know, whatever the case is in the other state, I don't know what all the factors were and why they would pick up and move that many miles. But they decided, they did their analysis and decided it was cheaper to right. move the entire company. And that's up to them.
And also, let's not assume that there's an infinitely low wage that immigrants would work for. Because there is a point, too, just like anybody else, where they're going to say, hey, that's not enough for me to pack up my things and move to that place if I'm only going to, you know, get paid that little. Now, granted, a lot of them have a much lower minimum than we would, but the same thing applies. If the market gets oversaturated there with the labor supply, then you're not going to keep having like this idea that you're just going to have wave after wave after wave of immigrant come in just isn't true. And if And if that is the case, it does happen that there is this kind of, I mean, it just means that there's a lot of work.
Which you said,
money to pay.
Yeah. Well, and there's also a couple other things going on. When, as people move in, now they are going to demand goods, right?
I mean, right. And that's the big thing where you're missing with the ceteris paribus is that if a company is able to hire them for cheaper, that means they can either lower their prices or they can, you know, have money to spend on other things or hire people to do other higher order work. They can expand more quickly. So it creates a whole lot of wealth in the economy by allowing the immigrants to come in and work for cheaper. And even if you are one of the casualties, if you will, of that, that wealth generation opens up other sectors of the economy that you're able to then enter that you wouldn't have before. So it's easy for me to say when I'm not the one necessarily losing my job, when someone comes in with a cheaper wage that they're demanding. But it's, you know, let's not commit the Luddite fallacy here. Because it's happened all throughout history that advances in technology and division of labor have created job loss.
Can you explain that, the Luddites?
Sure.
Who they were or what they did or why it's a fallacy?
Well, the fallacy is that so you have a new technology that replaces a job that someone used to do.
So like a sewing machine or any, you know, really any machine that does the work that humans did.
Right. And people would say because they see the immediate effect of it, that piece of equipment or technology replaces a worker, that they say that job or that person is unemployed forever then. So just think about if you're not convinced already by that is a fallacy, think about computers and think about how many jobs computers over the years have replaced. It is an unbelievable number. But is that the reason why we have any unemployment today?
It's actually more jobs created.
Right.
And there's, if you look at the population, I don't know what the population of the United States was in 1970, but I know it wasn't 320 or 350 million, whatever it is today. And there was a scare back then, like there's a scare today, by the way. artificial intelligence replacing everybody's jobs. This has been a theme all throughout history. In fact, the Luddites were in England in the early 1800s, and they were destroying machinery because they were taking their jobs. Machines were taking their jobs. They would actually destroy that machinery, which is just very sad, incredibly stupid. Because I think if we look at the standard of living in the early 1800s to today, where almost every single job from 1800 has been replaced by a machine, today we live a much better standard of living. Like I was saying earlier, in the 1970s, people were scared about these computers coming, replacing secretary jobs, replacing all kinds of jobs. I mean, in my industry, we run quotes on the computer. It takes about 2 seconds before it was a long process. Now you can email it instead of mail it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things you can think of in your everyday life. You use computers that before would have to be done by humans or were not even possible. And it replaced a ton of jobs. Yet we have a much better standard of living and the unemployment rate is basically around where it always was. So as technology improves, more jobs are created, jobs that people never would have dreamed of. For example, a lot of people make money, a lot of money, programming cell phone apps, which wasn't even a thing like 10 years ago, 12 years ago.
So. Right. No, I mean, that's absolutely the case. And we can look at my industry too, where there used to be, back in the day, there used to be just teams and teams of people that were the drafters, and they would just draw. Because we have a lot of drawings, obviously, everywhere.
Blueprint type stuff.
Right. isometrics, PNIDs, all that good stuff. Now our department's just a few guys because now they have computers, and it makes their jobs and their lives so much easier that you don't need a huge group of people to accomplish that work. So the company's able to spend that money in other places, and it's the benefit for everyone else.
That's how we get more productive as a society and how we get more stuff cheaper.
Right.
So it's good to replace jobs with machines and absolutely with immigrants or anyone who's willing to take it.
And just back to the original point that this guy made on Twitter, someone, Popper the Cat, posted a piece of an article by Benjamin Powell, to explain this issue. And he wrote regarding wages falling because of immigrants. How is this possible? Don't the laws of supply and demand dictate that wages would fall? Not when other things change at the same time. Those immigrants who increase the supply of labor also demand goods and services, causing the demand for labor to increase. This means that the effect of immigration on wages shifts from being a theoretical question to an empirical one. So he's just kind of echoing what we were already saying, and it's just, you know, it's unfair and way overly simplistic to just kind of say, oh, look, I have this chart. Let me just look at this thing. Therefore, because what's the guy's implication here? It's that the state would need to do something to fix this, to alleviate this problem.
Right. Or the business owner is getting wealthy by lowering wages.
Right.
And maybe he does make more money sometimes here or there, but if it's a competitive market, he's going to have to lower prices to keep his market share. I mean, profit margin is going to be about the same.
Absolutely. So it's, yeah, I don't want to, you know, be sitting here ragging on the guy, but I mean, because he's like many other people, you know, he knows a little bit about economics. And so he's able to use some economic theory to support his viewpoint. And, you know, he probably makes some, feel good about himself a little bit about it. But it just goes to show that just like knowing facts, and this is like kind of what I started out with, just like knowing these basic facts isn't nearly enough.
And
you need to understand the theory behind it enough and what's going on around you and everything else to actually be able to, you know, say something intelligent about.
Right. Or just step back and look at the world and think of the jobs that were available 50 years ago, 100 years ago, and let's be thankful that those jobs were replaced by machines and people who are willing to work less so that we could move on and do other things to make our lives better. You don't even need economic theory to understand that or to see that getting from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh 100 years ago was a lot tougher than it is today.
Right.
And there was a lot more jobs involved in getting you there.
Right. And just kind of the thing to keep in the back of your head, if your theory contradicts reality, then you've really got to reconsider.
Should re-examine your theory.
Right.
And that being said, like, hey, if you know, McDonald's puts out these self-ordering touchscreens, sure, I'd feel bad for the guy who was working there, who was making a couple bucks and now lost his job. He'll find other work. But what does it say about that person? Because you hear the stories. I've been working at McDonald's for 10 years, making minimum wage. What does that say about you? You should be thanking McDonald's. You haven't gained a single skill in the last 10 years. You haven't improved yourself at all in the last 10 years to make it worth them paying you more to keep you. I mean, presumably the reason you're working at McDonald's is because you can't get paid more elsewhere. So you should be thanking McDonald's for even hiring you to begin with and keeping you employed, because no one else is willing to pay you what McDonald's is paying you. Otherwise, you would take it.
Absolutely.
So just throwing that out there.
T- tough love from Slappy Jones.
That's right. We are heartless libertarians.
Yeah.
But it is the reality. If you're working minimum, if you haven't had a wage increase in 10 years, maybe you should try to better yourself, improve yourself, make yourself more more valuable to your company, or look at other jobs. And if no one else is willing to pay you based on your experience, then that means you're not providing value and you should try to improve yourself in some way, right, instead of demanding government to do something, which is forcing someone to give you more of their money.
I agree. That's kind of the difficult thing to do, is to not have introspection, or to have introspection is difficult, instead of blaming kind of the rest of the world around you. It's kind of ironic that they'll ignore the kind of the ceteris paribus when dealing with this, but then when it comes to talk about themselves, they will mention every single variable that's not in their control as to the reasons why someone's in the spot they're in. So,
right. Well, you have anything else to add on it? Was there anything in your tweet? I didn't read all your tweets, so I don't know.
No, we kind of covered everything. Nice that there are other people were chiming in and, you know, made some great points about it. Like someone else said that, it actually kind of has the effect that the existing population actually kind of sees a wage increase because of how things are made cheaper around them. So it has that kind of effect on it for the
right.
But yeah, that's all I had. Do you have your I think you had a free market success story?
Well, I guess it's really a yeah, sure. It's a free market success story. So over the weekend, I was talking to a friend about the possibility of stateless societies. And of course, the question comes up, what about the roads? And, you know, all you other NCAPs listening, we always get this and we're always supposed to explain how it would work in with free enterprise, in a free society. But the truth of the matter is, we don't know. All we know is that it will work better than what we expect. And so why I say that, and this is what I was saying to my friend, is look around you. Look at almost everything that happens. No one could have predicted this. When I was in college, I had a Nokia brick phone. I thought that thing was amazing. Text messages were awesome. I could not have imagined an iPhone, which was only a couple years away.
You play that snake game too.
Snake, yeah, exactly. And I played it. It was great. It was fun. I couldn't even imagine what we have. I never would have predicted it. Paul Krugman said the internet would have about as much effect on the economy as the fax machine. And also look at ATMs and just think of a time before we had ATMs where you had to go to the bank to get your money. If you were had an account at US Bank, you had to go to US Bank, make your deposit, make your withdrawals. Then they come out with these ATMs. I could already hear what people would have been saying at the time. So you're going to put these ATMs in different stores. Well, what happens when the big bank puts their ATMs everywhere and no one can get money unless they go to that bank? Then everyone will have to go to that bank, and then that bank will raise an army and kill everybody or something along those lines. In our area, there's a convenience store called Wawa, and they all have PNC ATMs in there with no surcharge. But the market was able to figure out a way using Visa, Plus, Star, whatever those, you see them all on the back of your debit cards. I don't even know what they all do, but it allows me, who is a member of a different bank, I have accounts at a different bank, to go into a PNC ATM with no surcharge and get money. It works unbelievably. PNC does not require you to be a member of their bank. And so what I was suggesting was we would see something like that with roads. We all want to get our money when we need it as convenient as possible. And the market came together and figured out a way to do that to where it's profitable for everyone. And PNC makes more money by letting anyone use their ATM than if they only let PNC bank depositors use their ATM. Just like the roads, we all want to use roads. I don't know how it would work. there would probably be some road companies, and they're all connected in some way, like the way Visa connects different banks. And maybe you pay for it like cell phone minutes. You have, you know, with your cell phone data, you can either buy 1 gig, 2 gig, 4 gig, or have unlimited. It might be something similar to that with your road usage. You have unlimited miles versus 100 miles. I mean, the possibilities are limitless. The only thing I'm sure of is it would work even better than I can imagine. And it would be seamless and easy and inexpensive for everyone to use as much as they want or as little as they want. So that's what I had for my free market story.
Yeah, but that doesn't explain how the roads will be built.
Well, we would create little governments to do that.
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with that, our show notes page again is mcflugel.com/63, where you'll find some links to some relevant topics like the one I mentioned from the Benjamin Powell piece. And then I have another one that I wrote a while ago on Ceteris Paribus. Also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can also find links to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to our email newsletter. So you going to watch this big game tonight, Slappy?
Eagles Redskins?
No, the tractor pull.
Oh, you got it in.
That's
you got it in.
I planned this one all day. I was, you know, now it's just to the point where I'm just toying with you. You probably thought you had me. You probably thought you had me. But that is the one note that I had written down for myself tonight.
Yeah.
Tractor pull.
Did you get a tattoo of a tractor yet on your hand so you can see that?
Yeah. I did. So, all right. Thanks for listening. Make sure you tell your friends to check us out, especially those of them who really like tractors.
If you have any of them, you need to get out more, like I do.
No, you don't. See you next week.
Peace.